Makes absolutely no sense that Luke would do something like this. I mean, the incentives are certainly not there. If you know anything about his history, he's done so much for Bitcoin over the course of the last 16 years.
If you read like the fiat standard, it really adds up why the world is the way it is when you look at the economic reality that most people face.
The government has failed them. The banks are robbing them through inflation. Everything that, you know, they've gone through in their lives has just been in total and epic failure.
Mandatory digital ID. Like, who the hell is this clown to dictate how people live their lives? Nobody should be putting up with this. And it's just, I don't know why there's not a stronger resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Tony is back and we've got Sophie here. Guys, thanks for joining. Okay, up first, this is big headline news. So there is a leaked report that Luke Dash Jr. plans a hard fork to, quote, save Bitcoin. So this is reported in The Rage. And they share a bunch of his, or a bit of a thread of tweets that he, or text that he had with someone talking about hard forking. The risk of CSAM, all of these things we've heard. The interesting thing here is that Udi, who is very much not on Luke's side here, actually tweeted, he said, I read the Luke Dash Jr. hit piece. It's wrong. Basically, the entire article is wrong. Sloppy, low-quality propaganda, which is fascinating. But Sophie, I'm going to turn this over to you first. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think this is real? Do you think this is something that's actually being planned or something that could possibly be attempted?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Udi. I think this is definitely a hit piece. I think this is meant to stir the pot. It just doesn't really pass the smell test for me. It doesn't follow the core ethics of Bitcoin, which I think at the end of the day, Luke Dash Jr. is trying to get closer to by removing spam and making Bitcoin just money. And I just don't see how making a hard fork, although it could be a solution for him, you know, getting what he wants and for knots to like fully pass. It's just there's history that shows that that kind of thing just doesn't work. Look what happened with Bitcoin Cash when they tried to fork. Like it just it was a complete failure of a project. So if, you know, it would be shooting yourself in the foot if you actually thought something like this, and it just doesn't pass the smell test for me.
Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, man, I think these are just more of the dirty games that we've been seeing being played out lately. I mean, remember when I told you, like, this is where the fight you stage gets ugly? Who knows where this is coming from and who's behind it? But, you know, if you wanted to attack Bitcoin, you can't, everybody knows you can't attack the tech directly, right? So what do? You cause confusion, distraction, you cause a chaotic mess in the community, in the space itself, to distract or de-incentivize, you know, newcomers from coming into it because they think, oh my gosh, this is a big headache. Let me steer clear from it. That's how I see this. It makes absolutely no sense that Luke would do something like this. I mean, the incentives are certainly not there. What kind of an idiot is propagating this type of garbage is, well, I'm sure at some point we'll find out. But this is to be ignored. I mean, I was very surprised that Udi, of all people, would come out and say this. Respect to him for making that claim. But yeah, I completely agree with him. This is a very, very low-quality hit piece and should be ignored entirely. Luke has no incentive to harm Bitcoin. If you know anything about his history, he's done so much for Bitcoin over the course of the last 16 years. In fact, if I understand correctly, he's literally saved it twice. So I just, the math doesn't compute in my head that someone like this would want to do something as preposterous as what this retarded, you know, so like this conversation is stating. And who knows, AI could have fabricated this. I mean, in today's age, it's very easy to whip something like this up.
Yeah, I'm like, I could imagine a world where Luke feels there, like he seems very convinced and has high conviction that Core 30 is malware and that it is, you know, if it's widely adopted, is going to destroy Bitcoin. And so I could imagine a scenario in which desperate times call for desperate measures. I don't think I don't see us being there yet, even in his mind, because Core 30 hasn't been rolled out formally. And in that alone, I feel like it would be more of a wait and see. Does Core 30 get adopted broadly? Does it have the implications that he anticipates? And, I don't know that I feel comfortable weighing in on, is it exclusively a hit piece? But it seems to me like it certainly could be, and probably it's going to get way more attention and be retweeted and everything way more times than is necessary. We should probably just wait and find out what is actually going on. He has denied it. The fact that even someone like Udi, who I can't believe I'm saying, I might side with on this one, is calling it a hit piece, is I think maybe the signal that we need, as we evaluate. So we'll see. Alrighty, guys. Michael Saylor. So I think a week or so ago, we talked on the show about he weighed in on the Knott's Core debate, speaking of the subject. And it was it was at a public event. He was asked a question about his position, and he's sort of always gone back to proceed cautiously with changes to Bitcoin. This time he reshared a clip of him speaking on what Bitcoin did with Peter McCormick a while back. I don't actually know when it was, but at the end he says, protect the network, don't F with the network. And then he says, run Knott's. And so he is actually making a very clear statement. And by the way, we have been at many times critical of some of the ways that Saylor in more recent years has framed Bitcoin, digital capital. Like at least Tony, you and I would agree that that's an inadequate and incomplete way of framing Bitcoin. But it's interesting to see that he has a sufficiently strong opinion about this subject that he's not only weighed in at a high level, but he says now run Knott's. I would be curious to hear, Tony, what sort of signal that sends for you.
I couldn't agree more on him on that sentiment. I mean, I've said it many times in the past. You have to understand what's at stake here. Bitcoin was created for the separation of money and state. The enemy, so to speak, is very clear. If anyone wants a chance at a dignified life, one that is, outside the control of, an evil empire that has designed tools for centuries to enslave, control, censor, and surveil, well, this thing must be protected at all costs. There's no time for bickering over nonsense. There's no time in, throwing allegations left and right, trying to disrupt the space. Every intelligent effort, every, logical person's time and energy must be united in ways never seen before in order to ensure that we get to the point where this thing can no longer be stopped, which in my opinion, I think we already are, but we still need the maturity of more tools in order to scale this to 8 billion people. So when I see bickering between Core and Knott's, people that are supposed to be on the side of Bitcoin, to me, it signals that there's like, if they forget who the real enemy is, it's not your team versus their team. It's us versus the house. The house is the evil empire. We are the ones that are trying to walk towards the light. Bitcoin is the tool that we have at our disposal, that peaceful revolution that gets us there. Every man and woman and living soul should be doing everything they can to ensure we do this. And so I completely agree with Saylor. You don't F with the network. And if you do, you're going to piss off a whole bunch of people that are going to come after you and make sure you don't go far.
Yeah. Sophia, what do you think about that? Do you think him weighing in on this is symbolic of something, or is it just, do you think his aversion to changes without, what I would argue are broad consensus to the network being problematic? It's an interesting thing for him to weigh in on is someone who tends to talk very high level long term on the subject of Bitcoin, to say, here's a technical detail that I think is important for us to focus on.
Well, I think Michael Saylor, first of all, he's protecting his bags. I think he knows that if the network gets clogged with a bunch of spam and transactions become unaffordable for the regular person, then that is a way that Bitcoin could fail. And, second, so I think that he really thinks that Bitcoin should just be used as money. I think he actually just believes that on a principle level. But two, I think he also realizes that this debate isn't going to be fought by force. Like, anybody who uses force over power is going to lose. And Michael Saylor has a lot of power in Bitcoin. I think that by him using his voice and his influence to advocate for knots, to advocate for Bitcoin just being money, he is pushing people and persuading them with his power to do the thing that would be the best for the network, because ultimately it's the democracy of networks that is going to influence Bitcoin, not just one single person or a centralized entity. If not, that would kind of make the whole point of Bitcoin irrelevant, right? So the more people sign up, I know that like so many people are watching the percentage of nodes that are running knots and core. And they, you know, this is definitely going to make that percentage go up. And here we have a special guest.
Yo! What's up, Nico?
They say what's up.
So that's I think that's a good take. I would here's the thing too. I would step back for anyone who is evaluating the situation. Do your own research, because I think a trap that people fall into is they fall in love with Luke and Mechanic, or they fall in love with Shinobi and Udi and Callie and whoever. And so they just say, well, that's the direction I'm going. I like what they said, in spite of any, there's no real perspective. Like for me, it's less technical what's right or wrong. And it's more, do I like the approach Core is taking? The answer is no. So I run knots. And the same thing is true with Michael Saylor. Yes, he is an influential voice in Bitcoin, but I don't think you make this determination just because Michael Saylor said that. I think you need to be your hero and sort this out on your own to some degree.
I would look at a lot of the things that Bob Burnett has said on this, especially like what I mentioned about the clogging of the block space and like transactions and how and what the future of that looks like. And that's kind of how I arrived to my conclusion. But I think that Saylor saying it is a way to, because ultimately people will like listen to what Saylor has to say, whether we like it or not. And so, you know, I think he's trying to use his influence or what he believes is the right thing.
Yeah, I think that's well said. All righty. Pete Rizzo says that $2 trillion, of course, it's breaking because it's Pete. $2 trillion search giant Google to buy stake in public Bitcoin mining, Cipher Mining. Big tech backing Bitcoin. This is huge. I have my thoughts on what this could be. But Tony, I am curious, is this signal? Is this something that you think we're going to see more of? And what do you think the end game is for an institution like Google in doing this?
Well, I mean, all roads are going to lead to Bitcoin in some way, shape, or form. I mean, all big tech is going to, you know, adopt Bitcoin in whatever capacity they can. For me, I don't pay attention to these things because I want the masses to adopt Bitcoin, not the institutions or the governments. And so whenever I read headlines like this, you know, it sort of like gives me a sense of urgency to push the messaging even more aggressively out there, hoping more plebs hear it and, you know take control of their own finances and get some allocation to Bitcoin and learn how to self-custody it themselves. Because, you know, once these big players with seeming like unlimited resources finally come in, I mean, the supply is fixed. Once it's gone, it's gone. And I don't think any of these guys are buying Bitcoin to speculate on it. So the entry point, once the supply is vacuum cleaned, is going to be extremely high for the regular Joe. And that's really what I want to see. I want to see Bitcoin in more pleb hands than government and institutional hands. So while this is good news for everybody that's cheering or following the number go up, my perspective on things is slightly different. You know, I want to see people go up, people's, you know, freedom and financial comfort levels go up. I don't care about these institutions.
I like that about you, Tony. What do you think, Sophia?
I agree. I think that, you know, peer-to-peer adoption is so much more important. And at the same time, AI has been such a huge disruptor for Google that I think they are looking at Bitcoin treasury companies and saying like, okay, how can we pivot to kind of, you know, save our company or save at least like the parts of our company that we're losing to, you know, like to use it in Bitcoin or whatever. So I think that might be a reason why they're investing in mining. They certainly have the infrastructure to do that. So it would be, you know, little to no investment on their part. It just, it would have to be just, you know, running Bitcoin.
Yeah. So I tend to imagine one of two scenarios here. So one, either they're buying companies or you know, taking stake in companies like this for access to the infrastructure potentially. I think probably more likely, though, and this is maybe more bullish, is that they recognize that they're going to have many AI-driven data centers around the world to service different geographical locations and jurisdictions. And they want to have load balancing because it's, if you've got a data center servicing the United States or, you know, a portion of the United States, at some point the folks using that go to sleep and you've got all of this infrastructure. What can you do to make it productive when people aren't utilizing it actively during the daytime? And Bitcoin mining, like we've seen in rural locations in Africa, enables economic value where there might not have otherwise been any. And so I think this is really cool. I think people are starting to figure it out. But I agree with you, Tony. I agree with both of you, I guess. We need more people to recognize that this is the direction the world is heading. You need to get some allocation of Bitcoin, learn self-custody, run a node, do all the fundamentals that we talk about all the time here. Alrighty, guys, so that's good news. The bad news is that Mike Hobart tweeted, in 2024, the average household income per adult before taxes was $92,000. So that's the average. In the same period, the median household income per adult before taxes was $45,000, which means that effectively 50% or less than 50% of people are actually, or households are actually earning less than $45,000, which means we're seeing a growing gap in terms of the haves and the have-nots. Income inequality is exploding. Tony, you've probably seen and experienced a bit of this before. I would love to hear what you think of this and what your takeaway would be.
Well, this pretty much confirms that the majority of people are living, you know, at or below the poverty line. They can't make ends meet with these numbers. The rate of debasement and theft that, you know, these people are encountering is like mind-boggling at this stage. And so how long this lasts before it explodes is anybody's guess, which is why I always laugh when I hear about these government numbers when they come out bullish. The economy is doing well and the economy is increasing and, you know, all that, all these glorified numbers, when all it takes is a walk down the block to see that the reality is completely in the opposite direction. So if you can't afford housing, you know, like, I mean, basic necessities, how long before that escalates? I lived through something like this. Obviously, everybody who knows my story knows, you know, this is what happened in Lebanon when everything fell apart. This is just, you know, you're headed down the same trajectory. So the United States, of course, is a much bigger country. So things, you know, are a bit more spread out and maybe the threshold is a little longer. But ultimately, I don't see this how this improves anytime soon. And when it breaks, and break it will, that's when you're going to have to figure out a way to deal with the ramifications of people being really angry, because at that point people function on instinct. You know, there's no rational thinking anymore. It's whatever comes to mind. I want an answer. I want it now. I'm going to get my solution, whichever way, shape, or form I see fit. So very dangerous. It's a very dangerous scenario. I hope we don't see it, but, you know, considering all this news that's breaking out on you know, on a weekly, monthly, you know, basis, for me it's just a question of time. So how these people opt out is also another, you know, another challenge. I mean, if you can barely put food on the table, even if you were to explain the money problem to them and offer Bitcoin as an incentive. Unfortunately, these folks, you know, have a more immediate urgency to cater to than to worry about, you know, sound money, which is, you know, it's like a bad catch 22. And this is all the result of the fiat system. And I don't know how we fix this, man. It's going to be like a long and painful process, but I think it's going to take a lot of, I guess, Bitcoiners at some point to contribute back to humanity in order to help those that are going to be in dire need of assistance.
Yeah. Hey, Sophia, I'm going to move to the next story too, so you can kind of comment on both at once. So the other thing we were going to share, the affordability nightmare would take a 38% drop in home prices or a 60% jump in household income just for affordability to go back to 2019 levels. So you must now make $113,000 per year to afford the median home in the U.S., and they say, will housing ever be affordable again? You can comment on either or both of those.
So I think that those numbers are skewed. I think the data that we have is actually false. I think the reality of the situation is a lot worse than that. And you can see it in, you know, the psychological impact that is being had, especially on young people all over the world. But I can only speak for this country in the U.S. It seems like every week we're seeing people become more and more partisan and kind of devolve into social media because there's just no hope left in young people. Nobody wants to actually work for something because we're all in this soft state of communism where no matter how hard you work, you just don't get rewarded for your labor in a fair way where you can afford a home, where you can afford dignity and self-respect, groceries. So I know, and you know, and the people watching the show know that the only way to kind of take back some of your respect is to buy Bitcoin and put it into self-custody. But how many people are actually, you know, in a state of mind to feel that, to trust that that is correct when every other institution in their life has screwed them over? The media has lied to them. The government has failed them. The banks are robbing them through inflation. Everything that, you know, they've gone through in their lives has just been in total and epic failure. And so it's not just a question of, you know, making sure that Bitcoin works and that it stays so that these things can, you know, correct themselves, but it's also a matter of like establishing trust again. And that's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah. Even if we take these numbers as they are, and I'm fully open to what you're suggesting, that they could be skewed in a more positive light, it all adds up. I mean, the deterioration of food quality, obesity rates, education, like the education benchmarks that schools just aren't hitting anymore. Desperate people, the fact that we're resorting to all of these, like this cultural decay that we see, it really, if you read like the fiat standard, it really adds up why the world is the way it is when you look at the economic reality that most people face. So incredibly sad, Tony, I'm with you. I don't know, like, I think ultimately over a long enough time horizon, Bitcoin is the antidote to this, but how that plays out and how messy it is in between is anyone's guess. So,
but there's also one thing to bring in here. Like, I mean, if most people can't make $113K a year, that's before AI is put into the mix, right? So if you can't make that number now, how are you going to make it when you have machines taking over pretty much all low-hanging fruit jobs? Like, what do you do? What do you do with these people?
It's a good question. And
they're all going to fight each other. I mean, we're all addicted to fighting each other online. I feel like that's just going to get worse because there's going to be so much free time. And we're already so addicted to being on these social media platforms that, you know, it's going to be a new way, you know, for people to control us, honestly.
This is what I've been warning about. This is like my biggest fear, is that when you have nothing to lose, things turn violent just, you know, organically, because it's just survival of the fittest at that point. Like, what do you have to lose? Who's going to get in your way? Right? That's the mindset. That's the dangerous mindset. And so that worries me. That personally, that worries me, because I lived through this, or at least a version of this, 6 years ago. So if 5% of what I lived through comes to a country like the US, like, holy shit, man. You want to see Armageddon? You have no idea what that looks like.
It's the sad reality, and something that I anticipate in the next, I don't know, 5 years or so, we're gonna see some form of UBI. I mean, they're gonna roll out government subsidized living, basically, to some degree. And honestly, while I'm in principle very opposed to UBI, they've put us in a position where I understand the sentiment that people will feel. AI is taking my jobs. I can't even make ends meet. How do I afford groceries? That's not going to make anything better, but it's going to be another temporary patch, more money printing. And that is a good signal for everyone to remember to study and consider buying and self-custodying Bitcoin. Alrighty, guys, we've got some news from Clown World, stablecoins. So Circle is considering reversible USDC stablecoin transactions. In other words, they are considering just being another bank, it sounds like. So no immutability. It's going to be, fiat 2.0, I suppose. Tony, you've been very critical of stablecoins for quite some time. You refer to them, I think, as CBDCs that have yet to be activated or weaponized. What do you think about this announcement?
Of course, that's exactly what they are, reversible stablecoins. I mean, that to me, that sounds like Ethereum, doesn't it? You know, when you can, you know, pass a transaction, change your mind, rewind it, you know, give it back, you know, all that nonsense where nothing really changes. It's just in digital form now, controlled by another corrupt entity. All of these games, all of these, you know, rails that are being formed are still within the broken, rotten legacy system. They're just trying to modernize the corruption. And so none of this is good for humanity. Yes, some people might argue it's faster, it may be a little bit cheaper, but ultimately you're still that donkey with a leash on your around your neck that is controlled by some lunatic that, you know, believes they have the right to decide when you can spend your money, how much of it, if it expires, if you're allowed to save, if you're allowed to travel, where you're supposed to go. All that dystopian nightmare, like as much as we describe it, my advice is to take that advice and to amplify it by like a million. Because when you've got such power in the hands of psychopaths, criminals essentially, there's no end to the creativity that they will go to, even if it's just for fun, right? For their own entertainment. And so if you don't want to be caught in that dystopian hellhole, well, you have got to understand that the world, as of 2008, has an option, the exit, and it's called Bitcoin. It's not funny money. It's not a stock. It's not a share. It's not something that you buy to sell for worthless paper later on. It is money that you upgrade your worthless toilet paper into and you learn how to use. It's as simple as that. And right now, what we're starting to see is the world dividing. Okay, there are circular economies that are being formed around the globe that live 100% on Bitcoin all in its entirety. These are communities of people that have come together from all factions of the world, of all, you know, all jobs, all the skill sets that are fully self-sufficient. And at some point, these circular economies are going to become extremely valuable and everyone's going to want to live inside of them. Except I don't think it's going to be that easy. So the option to exit is available to 8 billion people today. The problem is all this messaging, all these amazing Bitcoin channels, all this education isn't heard by the masses. It almost feels like we're within our own little isolated echo chamber. But, you know, the effort has to be put out more to reach Mr. and Mrs. walking down the street with no idea what they're walking into. So I'm hoping, you know, we were able to reach a larger percentage of the population, because otherwise, all of this bullshit, this USDC stable coins and all these digital assets that are being formed within the legacy systems, these are all traps. These are all glorified traps that are absolutely no good for anyone. You do not want to be stuck in this nightmare.
Sophia, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, so I completely agree with Tony. I think that's a really nice way of putting it. Stable coins are just CBDCs that haven't been deployed by the government yet. And then I also feel that this Circle thing, like with the reversibility, isn't that just a bank? Isn't that just like what we have already? I don't understand what it is that they're trying to do here. And they also require KYC, so I really don't understand what they're trying to do here. It's not like, for example, Tether, that, you know, it's fine, like it's centralized, it is a stable coin, but they don't require KYC, and they kind of follow the Bitcoin ethos that, like, you know, you're responsible for your own money once you send a transaction. It's not reversible. I just don't understand why they created this and why they're marketing it. It kind of reads like can we curse here? Like a shitcoin? Like that's kind of what it reminds me of, and I don't understand the point here.
I think if I were to probably give the point that they're after is that most people are comfortable with the banking system, and this is their, and they're used to, well, my bank can save me. I've got FDIC insurance. They could reverse a transaction because it's just a digital ledger that they centrally control. And so this is a way of getting people onboarded into their stablecoin with the comfort that people think they have of operating within the banking system, which we obviously, you know, inherently.
I mean, it reminds me of when people like arbitrarily start bringing up blockchain in the conversation. It's like, okay, like what function does this really play here? And it's just, it's kind of like a buzzword. And I feel like the same way Circle is using stable coins as a buzzword, because they realize that a lot of people in lesser developed countries, for example, like my country in Venezuela, a lot of people are using Tether because they believe still in the US dollar. They still, you know, it's like I mentioned in our previous segment, there's like this element of trust that Bitcoin needs to reach with people all over the world because they're just not educated fully on Bitcoin and how revolutionary it is. But, you know, with this, it's like you still need a KYC. It doesn't really help the person in Afghanistan who can't open a bank account because the, you know, fiat is the overlord of the entire economic model in the world. You still need a KYC. It's still reversible. You might as well just have a bank account. I don't understand what these people are saying. And it just feels like a big Ponzi marketing, like multi-level marketing level scheme.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. And you're absolutely right. But the good news is, like, the silver lining is that as the world continues to decay, at some point, you know, these people are going to start looking for better answers. And again, all roads, one way or another, will ultimately lead you to Bitcoin, because that's where the grass is going to be, you know, very visibly greener.
Yeah, and in a way, this is like, it's a stepping stone for some people.
Correct.
But ultimately, I agree with you, Tony. I think it's just a CBDC that hasn't been deployed yet.
100% sure.
Absolutely. Alrighty, guys, up last, let's watch this video briefly from Keir Starmer.
And that is why today I am announcing this government will make a new free of charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work by the end of this parliament. Let me spell that out. You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID. It's as simple as that.
All righty, so Keir says that you need to have a digital ID if you want to work in the UK, period. That is his point in the plan. We talked a little bit about digital IDs. It felt a little more hypothetical, I think, a week ago. It was like this thing they were kicking around, and now he's saying this is what they're going ahead with. Tony, give people a warning.
Man, how is this clown still in power talking and making all of these speeches? Like, I don't understand. Haven't anyone learned anything during the COVID years? Like, I mean, this is no different, except this is like exponentially worse. Back then, you couldn't work unless you injected a poison into your system. Now you can't work unless you want a digital ID. They are desperately trying to force you into programmable money so that they have a full leash around your neck. These people must be ignored 100%. Like, anyone with any form of self-respect and dignity should never comply with this nonsense. This is a crime. These are attacks against humanity. And the fact that people are still, you know, just taking the hits with no, you know, pushback, like real pushback, is absolutely mind-boggling for me. Mandatory digital ID. Like, who the hell is this clown to dictate how people live their lives? You know, like, nobody should be putting up with this. And it's just, I don't know why there's not a stronger resistance. So if you don't want to resist, then, as I've also said in the past, then shut up. You lose the right to complain. You have options. There are tools available to you to use and push back. If you don't take them, that's on you. There's no such thing as, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to change? I don't have options. That is nonsense. That's only fear that lives in your head. Everybody has the power to take back their own time and energy and to live on their terms within the confines of legitimate laws. This idiot is trying to push a narrative and trying to force you into thinking that somehow he has like a God-given right over your existence. He doesn't. Ignore him entirely.
I love that. Sophia, you have anything you want to add?
I'm shocked that the people, especially men in the UK, have not fought back against the tyranny that is going on in the UK. I mean, it's like beyond this. This feels like the biggest gaslighting thing, especially after, you know, everything that people have protested against in the UK. So, you know, they're saying, oh, we're going to take care of immigration, but we're going to do it by making sure that everybody has a digital ID to work. And it's just when the government starts to, you know, want to know your ID like that, you definitely want to vote with your feet and figure something else, or stay and take your country back. Because we've seen what's been going on with freedom of speech in the UK. I mean, the cops have been showing up to people's houses and are threatening to arrest children for reading a post online that was naughty. And so I can only imagine how much worse the situation will be with a digital ID. And I have no words, honestly. I mean, not only is this going to eventually lead to a CBDC, I think it's going to lead to ultimate control of what people can say and think in the UK. And it's going to be an unrecognizable country, one that is very far away from, you know, the one that founded the principles of the US, essentially. I mean, we ultimately come from like the UK culture and school of thought. You know, we broke away from a king, and now they've just gone deeper and deeper and deeper into tyranny. And I think that if anything, they need to look at us and take a page from our book and kind of get back to that.
Yeah, I think if I could say one thing on this, it is that people need to remember that you do not have a right to free speech, to protect yourself, to labor in exchange for value, because government says you do, because they put that on a piece of paper. You have a God-given inalienable right to those things, no matter who you are, where you exist, whether you fall under the U.S. Constitution or anything else. The only thing that the U.S., that the Constitution does is it defines those rights clearly and says the government's job is to protect those. So when they begin to encroach upon your ability to do those things, they are in the wrong. It is not you seeking out government permission that needs to happen. It is them stepping back. And I think that fighting that fight is the most important thing that you will ever do, because you will lose your country, your way of life, and all of your freedom with it if you don't.
Alrighty. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, the people put these clowns in power, right? And the people have the power to remove them. But if the people people forget that, then nothing's going to change. Eventually, if this doesn't stop, what you're going to have is the United Kingdom prison. There's no more country. It's like their new, the British Alcatraz. And the people living in there are just like, you know, prisoners. They're just convicts, you know, thinking they're living in a free society. And good luck to that, man. I mean, once you get stuck in that shithole, I don't know how you come out of it.
You fight. I mean, it's like coming from a country like Venezuela, like the only way, who didn't fight, by the way, people in Venezuela did, you know, they protested, they made demonstrations, but they didn't really fight. And unfortunately, like that, in order to have peace, sometimes they say, the quote says, don't ban me, YouTube, sometimes there must be conflict. So, you know, the road is long and ugly for the UK, unfortunately, because they've already allowed a lot of their freedoms to be taken away from them. And it's now time to take them back.
Well said. Well, for everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Sophia, Tony, thanks for joining. Sophia, tell people where they can find you, and then we'll sign off here.
Absolutely. You guys can find me on Simply Bitcoin's YouTube channel. I have a show every week, sometimes twice a week, called Satoshi. You can also follow me at Internet Sophie, no E at the end, on X.
Love it. All righty, guys. Thank you for the time. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, guys. That was great.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want to back up in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.